Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio-guided walk, featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within and beyond the West End. Today's episode is a two-part series about the brutal murder of John Monckton, a devoted father and loyal husband who provided a safe and loving home for his family. But what began as a simple burglary left a family destroyed, having been confronted by the devil's child. Murder Mile is research used in authentic sources. It contains moments of satire, shock, and grisly details. And as a dramatization of the real events, it may also feature loud and realistic sounds, so that no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Michael, I am your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 131, The Trader and the Devil's Child, Part 1. Today, I'm standing on Upper Cheyne Row in Chelsea, SW3. Three roads south of John George Haig's acid-soaked basement. One road southwest of the abortionist of Helen Mary Pickwode. A short hop from Battersea Park, where Freddie Mills loaned a rifle to end his life. And a few feet from the vicious attack, which left sexton Robert McCarthy brain-damaged forever. Coming soon to Murder Mile. This is an exclusive part of Chelsea, between the River Thames and the supposedly fashionable King's Road. In the 60s it was hip, but now it's a flop, as any hint of originality has been diluted by an influx of self-obsessed tosspots with money but no style. So expect to see fur coats and facelifts, pompous turds in red trousers waffling on about portfolios, and over-coiffured rats carried in designer handbags. In stark contrast, one road south is Upper Cheyne Row, a very posh but oddly silent residential street full of family cars, a few trees, and four-storey terraces costing £3 to £6 million apiece. Unlike the flashier parts of the city, where lavish drives and ornate gates adorn the tacky tasteless mansions of half-wits who wear their wealth, these homes are simple and understated, with nothing ostentatious on the outside, as anything of value is on the inside, hidden behind solid windows, locked doors and discreet alarms. But not everyone here is a resident, and it's fascinating to see who we allow in or near our homes and who we don't, as the difference between an open door and a locked one can sometimes be as subtle as an ID, a uniform, or a parcel. At 30 Upper Cheyne Row, on the corner of Cheyne Row and Glebe Place, sits a five-bedroomed, four-storey brown brick townhouse. Back in 2004, this was the home of John Monckton, his wife and their two daughters. And as any family should, inside, they felt protected from any danger. And yet it was here, on Monday the 29th of November 2004, that all of their security became fruitless. When an innocent mistake, the kind we all make, destroyed a family forever. On the 13th of October 1955, John Victor Monckton was born into a long line of prestigious aristocrats. His cousin being Viscountess Monckton of Benchley, and his great-uncle Sir Walter was legal counsel to Edward VIII, who drafted the King's abdication statement, having chosen to marry Wallis Simpson. But what set John apart from many of the so-called elite wasn't his wealth, but his humanity. Goodness was in his blood, and kindness was in his bones. Physically, he was a striking man, exceptionally tall, but so slender he looked as if a stiff breeze might blow him over. Being bespectacled, with parted brown hair and thick arched eyebrows, he resembled a whip-smart man of maths. But what exuded most was his warmth, as among a big brain and deep pockets was a huge heart. Everyone described John the same way. He was gentle, thoughtful, loving and loyal. A man with a dry wit and a great intellect, who genuinely cared for his fellow human beings, whether he knew them or not. In 1979, instead of going into law, he was drawn into the world of high finance. Across the 1980s, as yuppies in red braces reigned, waving phones as big as house bricks and quaffing cocaine by the kilo. As a Catholic, John was the opposite. A moral man who was old-fashioned, but effective. In 1996, he joined Legal & General and later became its managing director of bonds, where his award-winning team managed £34 billion worth of assets. And John was regarded as one of Britain's most influential investors. Being raised to be successful, yet humble, neither fame nor money would ever change John. He dressed practically. He spoke in a quiet whisper. And although he was not averse to the odd luxury purchase, you could easily pass him in the street, unaware that the Sunday Times had listed him as one of Britain's wealthiest men. In his spare time, John had two passions: the church and his charity work. Praised as a man of deep Christian convictions, he was a devout parishioner at the Catholic Church of Our Most Holy Redeemer and a trustee of the Order of St. John's Care Trust, a non-profit charity providing care for the elderly. But as busy as he was, his work always came second to the most important thing in his life: his family. In the late 1980s, John fell in love with Homaira Taslimi, an Iranian lady who exuded both style and sophistication. Born in Tehran, educated in Washington, and having spent much of her life in France, with both of them being keen to settle down, on the 16th of July 1988, John and Homaira were married. In 1992, their daughter Sabrina was born, followed 3 years later by Isabel. And keen to keep his loved ones safe, in 1994, they moved into the affluent seclusion of 30 Upper Cheyne Row, where they lived without worry. Hailed as an extraordinarily devoted family, it was the little things in life that John loved the most. As although rich, above it all, he was a father and a husband, who always made time for meals, bathing his kids, reading bedtime stories, and wrapping his arms around his little girls with kisses and cuddles. John Monckton would do anything to protect his family, even if it meant giving his life. The most powerful word in the English language is home. A home isn't just a building, it's a sanctuary. It's the one place where every person has the right to feel safe. But what every homeowner fears the most is burglary. In 2005, a UK Home Office study questioned 82 burglars about their methods and motives. The average burglar is male, age 27, although many are under the age of 17. Younger burglars tend to steal through boredom or peer pressure, but the majority do it to feed a drink or drug habit. They steal from their own neighbourhoods, they rarely travel, and they work in spurts, committing as many as 20 burglaries a week when their funds are low and their addiction is high. Many criminals see burglary as relatively low risk, as less than 20% of all burglaries lead to an offender being prosecuted. As for choosing a home to break into, half of all burglars return to a home they've broken into before, leaving a few weeks gap to allow the insurance to pay out and any items they've stolen to be replaced. A home's contents are easy for a burglar to value, as owners often leave their curtains open and dump the boxes of any expensive electrical items outside for the bin men to collect. Most burglaries occur on a weekday, between 3 and 4 p.m., when the owners are at work, at the shops, or on a school run, with an unoccupied house made obvious by a car gone and the curtains closed. The biggest help to any burglar is a broken light, a high hedge, and a dirty window, as these shield their criminal activities. Locks can be broken, windows can be smashed, and alarms aren't a deterrent, as although loud, mostly we all ignore them, but they do indicate that a home has items of high value. In fact, the biggest fear for a burglar isn't being caught, but confronted. Key to their success is to enter and leave a home, unseen and unheard. So often they will avoid any bright lights, gravel paths, squeaky gates, barking dogs, and best of all, any home which looks occupied, with the lights and the TV on. Burglars fit into three distinct types. A chancer, who sees an opportunity and steals items to be sold quickly. A creeper, who is skilled in housebreaking, has the patience to seek out high-value items, but like a chancer, avoids being seen at all costs. And finally, a confronter. A truly dangerous criminal, with no fear of being caught, and who will do anything to defend themselves and to get what they want. In 1994, when the Monctons moved into 30 Upper Cheyne Row, they undertook a lot of renovations, including their home security. As a Victorian townhouse, it naturally had good defences. The windows were above head height, the walls were hard to scale, and they weren't accessible from the outside without a ladder. It had only two doors, one at the back, which was well lit and alarmed, and one at the front, with its door sat on top of an awkwardly steep set of stone steps, fitted with locks, deadbolts, a chain, and a spy hole, as well as a burglar alarm, a panic alarm, and an intercom on several floors, so they could answer the door without opening it. But even the best protection is embedded with a fatal flaw. John Monckton was a private man who did his job, loved his family, and never courted the limelight. Among a niche circle of bankers, priests, and charities, he was a celebrity of sorts. But even to those living on his own street, he was neither a name nor a face. And yet he came to one man's attention. In 2003 and 2004, he appeared in the Sunday Times Rich List and the Mail on Sunday's Rich Report, with a photo of his face and a profile on his life. Featured alongside famous actors, pop stars, sports legends, royalty, millionaires and billionaires. For some, this is an ego trip. For John, it was a security risk. But for a very desperate criminal, with a history of violence, an obsession with the wealthy, who was sat amongst the squalor of his bail hostel in Streatham, barely a few months out of prison, this was the perfect way to compile a dossier on his potential targets. Only John was not his chosen victim. Like all cowards, this particular robber would pick on easy targets. Someone older, weaker, and smaller. As he prowled the streets of Chelsea, not in search of a banker, but of a banker's wife, who dressed in designer outfits, with a bag full of cash and cards, and dripped in precious gems. All he would have to do is find her, follow her home, and wait until she was alone. Being a rich petite woman, Homaira Monckton was an easy target for the devil's child. Monday the 29th of November 2004 began like any ordinary day for John Monckton. An early start, few breaks, and long hours in the cutthroat world of high finance, where a dog-eat-dog deal can be the difference between wealth or death, as a slew of savage rivals are wrestled and slain. It's an aggressive arena where only the bravest, the quickest and the strongest will survive. But the only splash of red which is spilt is the flush of shame and the stain of debt. As a bonds trader for the LNG investment group in the city's financial district, John's true strength was never his knuckles, but his numbers. For John, business was good. But his home was where he wanted to be. So at 6 p.m, he left. At 7 p.m, the suited and bespectacled man strolled into Upper Cheyne Row. A dark but soothingly silent street, lined with familiar cars, a few trees, and no strangers or dangers. Just the shadow of his regular church, the soft glow of an old street lamp, and on the corner of Glebe Place, his home for the last decade. Through the curtains, he saw the familiar joy of the night ahead. In the basement kitchen, a meal was cooking. In the first floor lounge, the TV was on. And somewhere on the two floors above, maybe in the bedrooms, the playroom or the bathrooms, were his wife and daughter. As always, his long legs easily managed the steep Victorian steps up to the white front door, and only able to enter this house with a set of keys, as the toughened door closed behind him with a reliable thud. Its solid locks gave a reassuring click. With 12-year-old Sabrina at boarding school, tonight it was just the three of them. So although he missed her dearly, his home still radiated with the little things that he loved. The smell of a home-cooked dinner, the warmth of a fire, and the gentle splash as Homaira gave Isabel her bath before bedtime. Behind their windows, doors, alarms and locks, the Monckton family felt safe and secure. But they weren't. At 7:30 p.m., the doorbell rang. They weren't expecting a caller, especially not this late. So from the safety of the bedroom two floors above, Homaira spoke to the guest via the intercom.
"Hello, who is it?"
As a calm voice replied,
"Postman, I've got a parcel here for a Mr. John V. Mumpton."
Which was odd, but not unusual, as although most people know, the burglaries occur between 3 and 4 p.m. For couriers and delivery drivers, the work never stops. And although his arrival was unexpected, a locked door would always be open to a total stranger who carries something as subtle as an ID, a uniform, or a parcel. Homaira called down, "John, there's a parcel for you." As anyone would, he replied, "Okay, I'll deal with it." But as he walked to the door, he was rightfully cautious, and his security was there for a reason. Through the spy hole, John peeped. Its fisheye lens showed the obvious features of a delivery driver, as being dressed in a black woolly hat, an orange and blue fluorescent jacket, and a postal sack over his shoulders. This young black youth with a baby face and a big smile held in his hand a brown parcel. He said he was a postman, and he looked like he was. Besides, most people know that burglars don't ring doorbells. But still, John was vigilant. So as he unlocked the door, he kept the security chain on.
"Hello?"
John inquired. As the postman smiled,
"Parcel for Mr. Mumpton."
John wasn't expecting one, but the name was right and the address was correct. And besides, most people know that the majority of burglars avoid entering an occupied home. So as the stranger called, he said,
"You'll need to sign for it."
As we all would, John undid the chain, unclicked the lock, and as his last line of defense, he opened the door. But the postman was not alone. The second the door opened, John tried to slam it shut, screaming,
"No, no, no!"
As hidden behind the postman's legs, a dark shadow was crouched. All dressed in black, a dark set of envious eyes peered through the jagged slits of a black balaclava, with a gun in his left hand and a 6-inch blade in his right. Hearing the terror in her husband's voice, as he battled to force the front door shut to protect his wife and child, Homaira joined John's struggle as pure evil invaded their home. And although the tall man and tiny lady pushed with all of their might, they were no match for a fake postman and the devil's child. Overwhelmed, as the door flew open, the postman grabbed John. And although not a fighter, being a foot taller with longer arms, he did his best to keep his attacker at bay. But John was not the target. With him distracted, like a coward, the devil's child went after the object of this robbery, his wife. Homaira turned, as in her bedroom lay a panic alarm. One button, which when pressed, would activate the home's alarm and call the police. But as she ran up the stairs, without saying a single word, this seed of Satan stabbed the blade twice into her back and side. Struggling, she made it up to the first floor. But feeling a dampness in her back and no movement in her legs, she slumped onto the stairs as John fought on. in a voice as calm as death himself. The devil's child, whose real name was Damien, demanded,
"Give me your rings and your watch."
Which he did. And although they were rich and she was well-dressed, the pieces he took from her only looked expensive. So having taken her purse, it totaled barely £4,000. Beginning to black out, as the blood poured from her back, Homaira screamed, "John, I've been stabbed," as he wrestled Elliot, the baby-faced postman. Looking upstairs, he didn't see the epitome of evil coming towards him. All he saw was his beloved wife, ghostly white and drenched in red. And one floor above her, alerted by her mother's screams and peering through the banister, was Isabel. With two violent and dangerous men in his home, who would stop at nothing to get what they wanted, although he wasn't a fighter, John would do anything to protect them, even if it meant his life. With his face beaten, as Elliot gripped him from behind in an immovable bear hug, John's fight to force both men out of his home and away from his family was failing. And yet it was then, without any warning, that the devil's child lashed out in a volley of frenzied stabs against an unarmed and outnumbered man. John's hands were slashed and bloodied as he valiantly fought off his attacker. As the stained 6-inch blade sunk into his shoulder, his right arm, and his pelvis. So ferocious was the assault that, having mistakenly stabbed Elliot, with the full length of the blade, he buried the knife deep into John's chest, as one wound ripped through his right lung, and the last fatally skewered through this good man's heart. John slumped to the floor in the doorway of his lounge. And as the robbers fled up Glebe Place, Elliot whooped,
"Oh man, you're the business."
And Damien giddily fingered his haul of a few hundred pounds and some inexpensive costume jewellery. As the two cowards left John and Homaira to die. Which they would have done, had it not been for Isabel, who was only 9 years old. Doing as her mother said, Isabel locked the front door, called the police, and set off the panic alarm, alerting the street. Sat amongst the blood-splattered room, with Homaira feeling weak, pale, and partially paralysed, there was no denying that the quick thinking of this little girl had saved her mother's life. But with John lying motionless, his eyes closed, and his moans barely a whisper, even the paramedics couldn't save him. Isabel later stated, "I knew my daddy was hurt in the heart. A heart which made him good, honest, and loved. But having no pulse and gone into cardiac arrest, although 49-year-old John Monckton arrived at the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital at 8:10 p.m. 20 minutes later, he was pronounced dead. The next day, after hours of emergency surgery to save her life, and having lost 7 of her 10 pints of blood, although still in critical condition, from her bedside at St. Thomas's Hospital, Homaira had the heartbreaking task of telling Isabel and her 12-year-old sister Sabrina that their father was dead. John Monckton was a good man, a loving father, and a doting husband, who had done, as we all would, everything to protect his family. But criminals are cunning, and knowing how we think and seeing our weaknesses, he was duped by the kind of simple mistake that we all make. And although there's no mystery as why the Monctons were burgled, a few big questions remain. Who were the burglars? What drove them to steal? Why was Elliot actually there? And most importantly of all, who else is to blame for the murder of John Monckton? Except for the Devil's Child. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. Part 2 and the final part of The Traitor and the Devil's Child continues next week. If you enjoyed that, stay tuned for some extra tidbits and some aimless waffle after the break. Unless you don't want to, then don't. But before that, here's a true crime podcast which may very well be the equivalent of a Kit Kat, but with the wafer bit missing. So all that's left is the lovely chocolatey bit.
The Evidence Locker is a weekly podcast about international true crime. Made by hardcore true crime fans, it's somewhat grungy.
Hi, I'm Marie from Leeds in the UK, and my favourite episode is Death in a Funeral Home.
Hi, I'm Liz from Melbourne, Australia. My favourite episode is The Disappearance of Lars Mittank from Bulgaria.
Hey, this is Will here from Cork in Ireland, and my favourite episode has to be Israel Murder at School. Fascinating story.
Hi there. My name's Conrad, and I'm from Lexington, Kentucky. And my favorite episode is the Atlas Vampire Murder.
Join us as we explore the dark corners of the globe. Find us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.
A big thank you to my new Patreon supporters, who are Kylie Clark, Stephen Beeston, Karen Price, and Mads S. Olsen. I thank you all. I hope you're enjoying your new and exclusive Murder Mile goodies, as well as getting first dibs on the new exclusive Murder Mile mugs, featuring Reg Christie and Police Constable Arsenal Guinness. And a thank you to Kaylee, Nadine, and Peter Holloway, who sent very kind donations via the Murder Mile eShop and the supporter link, which Eva has already spent on a little butler's bow tie for me to wear when I'm serving her 3 o'clock cocktail. Plus an extra thank you to everyone who continues to listen to and enjoy Murder Mile. I thank you. Murder Mile is researched, written and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Eric Stein and John Books of Cult With No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So now the birds have shut up. Little blackbird outside. I welcome to Extra Mile, everyone. Hey, unedited bit, blah, blah, blah. Not essential. You don't need to listen to this if you don't want to. Blah, 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 blah. We all know that bit anyway. This is the waffly bit. Unedited. But this is just me waffling on. I will give you some extra details in a bit.
woke up really early this morning because I'm not too far away from a couple of little airports where all the little bastards who've got too much money and decide, oh, I know, I'm going to get into my little two-seater and going to go, and even though it's a tiny aircraft, it makes a horrible little sound and you can hear it from bloody miles away. And they do circuits over my head. So I woke up really early to beat the aircraft. And what have I got outside? I've got a blackbird right outside my window. It's like, I want to shag. Which is basically what they do. Randy little bastards. All they ever do is eat and shag. Oh, dear. Sounds like Eva, really. Right. I'm just getting rid of the shield around my microphone. Let me go and pop on a cup of tea. I'm going to pop on a coffee. Ran out of coffee about 10 minutes in. Because the start, my brain wasn't functioning. I think that either it was too early or my brain wasn't functioning. I couldn't say words. So I drank most of my coffee at the start. And then I grabbed my water, which has got those little orangey tablets that you put in, the fizzy orangey tablets. I haven't got them with me. The vitamin C things. And it made the water too bitter. It's really hard to kind of say words when you got really bitter mouth. Anyway, right, waffle. Yeah, if you're not used to Extra Mile, this is just regular waffle. And you're probably going, why do people listen to this? I don't know at all. Just putting my water in. There we go, water in. Yummy. I'm going to open up a window. Oh, hang on. Let's open up more windows. I didn't realise I hadn't unlocked them from the night before. Oh, there we go. Right. Oh, fresh air. Lots of Tweety birds. No coots outside. I seem to be in a coot-free area, although there is a moorhen, which is very excitable and having a bit of a flap at the moment. Let's just get... I'm just getting the pillows from behind the cushions behind my head out of the way. Because they muffle some of the sound as well. Oops, drop that. Oh, I've just dropped me. God, it's all falling apart now. I just knocked off my. Oh, come on, you bastard! I just knocked off my. You're not the bastard. It's the pop filter. Just couldn't remember the word of it then. A little pop filter, which stops all the. I was listening to a podcast recently with two comedians having a little chat. There seems to be a lot of podcasts about that out at the moment, where comedians have a little chat together. But basically, they try and segue in their regular material. And one of them, who has a very loud voice, doesn't have a pop filter, and therefore it sounded like this. Oh, yeah, I'm hilarious. And it's just like, oh, God, I can't listen to your shit anymore because you haven't got a bloody pop filter. Cost 10 quid. Go get a pair of socks or some tights. That'll do it. Oh, anyway, what else is going on in the world apart from waffle? Waffle. No cake, because I'm too far away from the shops at the moment. I'm in a very remote area, which is nice. But there is a shop near me that does a nice apple pie. So the last two nights and for tonight, I have custard and apple pie. So that's my evening treat. And it's a really nice thick apple pie as well. Yummy. I've moved on again because we have to move on, which is good. The nice area that's good for walks. The problem is it's been a little bit rainy and sunny at the moment, which is fine. But when you live near the canal, it turns it into mosquito and midges season. So... you'd be walking, like I walked along parts of the canal yesterday, and for about 10 minutes, all I did was I was just basically batting away thousands of midges and mosquitoes away from my face. And walking around, what I did was I covered myself in citronella oil, put it on my glasses, put it everywhere. Still couldn't get rid of the bastards. And then it started raining anyway, so it got rid of the midges. And then I got attacked by a dog. Yay! Little French bulldog running up towards me. Barking, and I thought, oh, it's going to go on. It just wants a stroke. And it came up to me. It bit my hand. So I put my foot up to kind of defend myself against it because I got shorts on and I didn't want it to bite my legs. And then its owners came behind. And its owners didn't seem to give a shit. I was like, I've just been bitten by your dog. And they were like, oh, he's just playing. He's like, doesn't look like he's playing.
And they were walking by a nice little sign that said, please keep your dogs on the lead, animals about. And they did not give a shit. So, I will inform the farmer. So the fact there's no animals in the field. But I just think if you can't control your dog and your dog bites people, put it on a fucking lead, you idiots. What else is going on? I'm away from the area that had rats. I was in an area before that had rats, and I had my first rat on the boat. If you subscribe to Patreon, you'll get a big chunk of an episode about the rat that came on board and my battle to get rid of the rat. Oh dear. He was only on for like about, I would probably say, the first bit for about 3 minutes, and then coffee's up, and then the second bit. I haven't even put my coffee in. I've been waffling so much. I haven't even put my coffee in. Hang on, I'm going to open up more windows. Oh, it is cold. All the windows are frosted up. Not frosted up, but they've kind of got all condensation-y. Hang on. Sugar in. I'm going to need two. I've got lots of coffee. It's just... powdered coffee. My brain is gone. I've got sugar in my system. Right, let's put the water in. Come on, Michael. Brain work today. There we go. My coffee in a Murder Mile mug. Not a Reg Christie mug. Not a Pete Constable Arsenal Guinness mug. Yeah, because they've all gone. They've all been sold, which is great. If you're a subscriber to Patreon, I'm trying to make it a lot of exclusives on there to kind of get people to subscribe. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, I get a very limited run of mugs, and I put them on there, and I go, hey, who wants an exclusive mug, an exclusive keyring? And there we go. So even I don't have them. Back to rat news. The rat came on the boat. I thought something flashed in front of my eyes. My eyes aren't particularly good. They're good for I can see my laptop, but everything else beyond that is a bit blurry. I've got special contact lenses. They're designed to work that way, so I don't have good vision, but I'm good for looking at a laptop. And something blurred by, and I was like, it's probably nothing. And then I checked the engine room, and I saw something shifting in there, and I thought it might be a cat. So I locked whatever it is in the engine bay. And then I went around the back of the boat and I opened the door. And as I opened the door, right next to my face was a big bloody rat. And it scurried off. So I locked all the windows and doors and went back into the boat. And then I realised I'd locked it back into the boat because it had gone around the front and come back in the other way. And then I realised I'd locked the rat between myself and the locked door. So there was basically a metre of space between me and the rat and the door. So I managed to get the rat out finally. God, dear, but ever since then, even though he has gone, there's no rat poo anywhere, which is great, and there's no scuffling, and I've put a bleach everywhere because they hate the smell of bleach and ammonia, and I've put peppermint everywhere because they hate the smell of peppermint, and as a last resort, next to me for a couple of days, I put rat traps, which is a last resort. I thought if they're going to come near me, I'm going to hear the snap. But everything else is designed to kind of repel them anyway. Do you know, there's no reason why they should come on the boat, and they haven't. So it looked like it was just one chancer. And I made enough noise, I banged enough stuff to kind of scare him. So he was like, oh, I'm not going to go back there. So good, I've got no rats. But since then, now I have rats in my vision. So every, like, shadows move, I think it's a rat. So yeah, not very good. Oh, rats, terrifying. Fine as a pet. I know people out there going, oh, I like rats. Rats are really nice. I've got rats. Yeah, fine. They're domesticated rats. I'm sure they're lovely. Wild rats, not. If you want to trade up your lovely domesticated rats that live in a cage for some wild rats that go scurrying in the woods, fine. Swap. I doubt you will. Right, what else is going on? I've booked my train ticket to go and see my dad and my stepmom. How exciting. This is very good. After 2.5 years of not being able to see them because of, you know, all the stuff that went on with mum and gran. And then the pandemic. So they've been in lockdown since just before the pandemic actually happened. I think they were in lockdown a month before it was announced that we were going into lockdown. So we normally see each other every 3 months, but everything kind of went a bit weird. So, finally, after 2.5 years, I'm going to get to see my dad and my stepmom, which would be lovely. That would be nice. Which is why Murder Mile Walks are back. They're back on the last Sunday in June, which is good. Yeah, every Sunday after that, there's no private tour. So please don't message me asking for private tours. I'm not doing them at the moment. I just want to keep everything simple and try and get back into the track, into the idea of doing it again. Which would be good. Yes, and then hopefully I'll be going back up to my old hometown. I will get to see Rich and Neil and Jason, and hopefully we will get to go to a pub. And I even did that a couple of days ago. I went to a pub in Hampstead. Very good, actually. Thought it was quite good. Very well done, very COVID safe. You can only go in through one way. You have to pre-book in. You need to have the NHS app to get in there. Everyone needs to be wearing masks if they're moving. When you're sitting down, you've got to stay in your seat. You can only have table service, a maximum of 2 hours there. And I thought it was all good. It's like one of our friends joined us to have a conversation. He wasn't actually sitting there. He was on his bike cycling past, and the guy came over and said, "I'm really sorry. You can't have a seventh person having a conversation in. We've got to keep it right just in case, because, you know, we could get shut down just for you having this extra conversation." So it was very good. Very good, I thought. What else is going on? I had me vaccine as well. It's been a busy week. Had me vaccine, which was good. Had no issues, no side effects at all. Felt really good. Although, to be honest, because they can't, last week's episode, sorry, I was a bit grumpy on that one. Wasn't in a good mood. They cancelled my vaccine for 2 days' notice. Hadn't told me why. They just said it cancelled. And then they lost my NHS record. So I had no NHS number. So everything had gone really shit. But then I rebooked in. Instead of booking into a place which was just a mile away, I ended up booking into a place which was 15 miles away. It's a good hospital. So I was like, sod it. I'd rather go to a good hospital than a golf course. So I cycled the 15 miles in, had my jab, another 15 miles back. I thought, right, I'm going to get sick or flu-y, as people say. So I bought lots of burgers and beers and get ready to get ill, lots of TV ready, prep myself in advance. And instead I got very pissed, which was very good, very good. I had lots of good food. So that was good. Didn't feel terrible at all. I think I might have had a slight cold for about 20 minutes or something. But to be honest, I'd cycled 30 miles that day. The next day I did some work. And then I cycled another 45 miles, went over to Hampstead and did some filming for Murder Mile. Did 45 miles. By the time I got back, I think I was too tired to realise whether the vaccine had made me ill at all. So that was all good. So I think that's a secret. If you are going to have your vaccine, my top tip is either do a shit ton of exercise and really knacker yourself out, or just get really pissed, or do both as I did. They're all good. Right, let's do some questions and then we'll dive into some stuff to do with this episode. If this is your first time with Extra Mile, you're probably going, what the frick is this? Well, this is Extra Mile. Don't ask. Right, question number one. Don't forget, these are quiz questions. I might ball some of them up. Sometimes I might not. Question number one. What is the average age of a burglar, according to the UK Home Office census thing? I added that last bit in. What is the average age of a burglar? Let's just say that. Right. Question number two. What is John's middle name? Question number three. Name the three different types of burglar. I kept having struggles with this episode. I kept saying burglar and burglar and things like that. I kept saying, just say fucking burglar. Question four. Name the Monctons' two daughters. Ooh, someone's just started doing their mowing. That's a bit early for mowing. Question five. John Moncton's great uncle Sir Walter was legal advisor to who? Question six. I seem to be going at the end of every answer. Question six. Homaira was born in which country? Question seven. What is the average house price on Upper Cheyne Row? Ooh, burpees. I got burpees all the way through that. I think because I had pate on toast for breakfast. Lovely. You needed to know that, didn't you? That was really essential. Question number eight. What is the name of the shoe shop Homaira visited? Question number nine. What two colours were Elliot slash the postman's What two colours were Elliot slash the postman's fluorescent jacket? I'm glad I don't have to edit extra mile. Question number 10. This one's a really hard one. John's father's name was John, but what was his mother's name? Right. Answers at the end of the show. I do actually have a little thing that I put at the end of my thing that says answer the questions. Otherwise, I know that I will forget. Right. Let's dive into some stuff. Just next week's episode, we're going to dive into who the postman and the devil's child were. We're going to do a look at the case from their perspective, because this is all primarily John's story. I made a conscious decision right at the start. I was like, I'm just going to tell John's story. Because if you tell it all the multiple sides, it just makes it too complicated. But there's an interesting kind of dichotomy between the postman and the devil's child. And that's what I want you to focus on next week. So this is just going to be about John and his family. I can't post any pictures on social media because I've already had someone get in touch with me from, I can't say which organization, but say, you've been using copyrighted pictures, so either you take them down or we take you to court. So I'm currently going through my website and getting rid of any. I actually thought I'd followed their website and I did their details correctly, I thought, but actually it turns out I'd balled them up, so I've got to take them down. And I've been told to take them off social media as well, which would be a real pain in the ass because I've been uploading for ages. Warning to anyone, if they're not your photos and you don't have the right to use them, be careful. Luckily that I've been given a warning, as opposed to once I was using some photos on my website and there was four of them and they charged me almost £400. And I was like, wow. And they're only tiny photos as well. Bastards, anyway. What else? Right, John Monckton. If you look at the picture of John Monckton, he looks really lovely as well. Do you know, he's really tall, he's thin, he's got big eyebrows, a lovely big smile. Do you know, he seems like a really nice guy. Very quiet, but obviously very intelligent as well. Initially, I wasn't going to do this case because I thought stockbroker. Instantly, thought went into my head and I thought, I bet he's a twat. I bet he's the kind of twat who does cocaine and, you know, treats people like shit and drives around in fancy cars and, you know. But when you look at him, you just go, he's a really nice guy, isn't he? He may be very rich and very posh, but he's incredibly nice. Came from a privileged life, but obviously whether it was his religious background that drew him into this, but he very much seemed to be interested in other people and their struggles and things like that, and you know, that is kind of reflected in his family as well. His family seemed to be very close-knit and lovely and everyone seemed to like them and they got on really well, and you know, so I'm just reading through. This is no good for you. This is just me reading and you going, me going, making that noise. I've also realized that when I write as well, I make this noise. I go, I hum the words. I don't know why. I keep doing it all the time. Very influential investor. He said one of the most influential investors of his generation within his specialist field. He had a team of 25 people and had won an award for a bond fund. £34 billion worth of assets they managed. Everyone seemed to like him. They said John had a great intellect and was a man of utmost integrity and kindness. He had a deep insight into the financial markets. He built up a strong team who admired him greatly and will carry on his work. There's one photo that I managed to get of John, which is him on the trading floor of the Eurodollar pit in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange at the close of the financial year. And, you know, he looks like he's having a good time. He clearly knows what he's doing. But as mentioned, you know, he's a very, very wealthy man, but also very humble as well, you know. don't think he really liked the fact that he was on the Sunday Times rich list and he was one of Britain's wealthiest men listed on there. I think he's one of these people who just like to keep under the radar. As mentioned, he was a trustee of the Orders of St John Care Trust, which is a non-profit organisation providing quality care and accommodation for the elderly, and it runs care homes across the country. What was the other thing? The religious bit. I'm going to go to that. So he's a devout Roman Catholic, a regular parishioner at the Catholic Church of Our Most Holy Redeemer, which is immediately opposite his home. And that's the place where I mentioned that at the start, that the sexton who, it's an antiquated word, but the sexton who was... Who ran that, Robin McCarthy, was badly beaten and left brain damaged, and that's immediately opposite his house. Like it's the nearest building, pretty much. John also joined the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, which is a Catholic religious order, in 1977. They said he was a man of deep Christian convictions, and he worked hard for Christian charities. What else was there? Yeah, he just seems to come across as quite a nice guy. Quite a little bit shy, a little bit quiet, but that's a good thing. Often you kind of find that the people who are kind of loud and mouthy, they're the ones that are desperate to prove who they are, whereas the people who are quiet are kind of, you know, they know who they are, they've got nothing to prove. It's always the same, isn't it? You always see that. There's three types of people in the world: the people who are good at things, the people who are good at saying that they're good at things, and then you get the rare types who are good at things and actually good at telling people that they're good at things. That's the hard thing, isn't it? If you're good at doing something, it's hard to say, hey, I'm good at doing something. But unfortunately, especially at the BBC when I used to work there, there'd be quite a few people there who, I'll be honest, were all mouth and no trousers. There's quite a few people who were very good at saying, oh yeah, this is my project and I'm all responsible for this because it's a success. Yeah, but actually it was a team effort and they were actually a small piece of the cog. Oh, I'm not going to go into details about that, but there's a lot of pricks there, I'll be honest about that. Glad not to be there anymore. Do miss some of the people who work there, some of the people I don't miss. Right. The robbery. Let's dive into the robbery. As mentioned, it had good security in the house. Do you know, even on the door, he got locks, he's got deadbolts. It was a UPVC door, which is one of those ones that hard to break down. He got a spy hole. There was an alarm, a panic alarm. Do you know, but it wasn't overdone. Do you know, from the outside, you don't see cameras all over it. You don't see something big that says, oh, this house is alarmed. Oh, this house is protected by dogs. It looks discreet. But obviously, everything was there and secure. So, obviously, people aren't expecting a home invasion. I think that's what I'm trying to get across in this story, that people aren't expecting... If you're going to be burgled, you're going to expect to come back to your house and go, oh, God, the window smashed, the door's broken, someone's got in, oh, no. There's stuff scattered everywhere. That's what you expect. What you don't expect is someone to ring your doorbell and go, hello, can you let me in? I'm blah, 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 blah. You know, as happened with this one, the postman idea seems to be one that they thought would work, and it did work. You know, it's one that we're all culpable of. If you think about it, it's like I got a message on my phone the other day from a delivery company that said, we tried to deliver to you today but you couldn't, you need to call this number. It was allegedly from Hermes, but it wasn't from Hermes, or herpes as I like to call it, and it said you need to call this number to rearrange and it will cost £150 to rearrange. And everyone will go, well, it's only £150, I need whatever that parcel is, I'll have it. And I just thought, sod it, I'm not going to collect it. I'm always, even a couple of weeks ago, I had one where they said they tried to deliver but didn't. And I was like, you tried to deliver at lunchtime and it's my PO box. And they were definitely in because I called them. What actually happened was my PO box people looked at the parcel, went, no, he doesn't have a box here. It was a new person. They hadn't done their job properly. So actually, I was sent a reschedule thing. What I actually did was I called up the guy who'd sent me the parcel because I knew what parcel it was. And I said, did they try and deliver it? He was like, yeah, they tried today at this time. And I was like, right, I will go to this website and rearrange. And luckily the courier called me. it was a great courier. It was like literally before he was like, oh, mate, yeah, I tried to deliver this yesterday, but they wouldn't accept it. And this is definitely the building. And I was like, yeah. And it was like, I'm going to keep you on the phone. I'm going to walk into the room. I'm going to speak to the same guy because it's the same guy again and keep you on the phone. And then you can confirm to him that this is where your parcel belongs to. And that was like, job done. Good for him, good for me. But, do you know, it's easy to be scammed by things. Do you know these kind of text scams and things like that? Like when you get one that says, you need to update your details with Lloyds Bank, and you think, I don't have an account with Lloyds Bank. Do you know, it's easy to get scammed. The second you press that button, they've got access to your phone, they've got access to anything you do after that. All of your login details, they can track all of that. So, just delete them straight away. Oh, I got burpees. I got coffee and pate burpees. Lovely. Eva's going to want to kiss me today, isn't she? Yeah, she always wants to kiss me. Always wants to kiss me. Right. What else do we have? So the spy hole. We're going to. The uniform wasn't particularly good. I think the idea was to, because you only really need to see that it's a postman from a distance. You know, no one really looks at details too well. All they really needed was for John to open the door. So those who saw it said it looked like a kind of Postman Pat style. You know, the cartoon character from the 1980s, 1990s, and there's a remake recently. So he's kind of, he's got a woolly hat, he's got a fluorescent jacket on, whose colours I won't mention because that's in the quiz, and he got kind of the postman's bag over his shoulder. And if you think about it, you know, official Royal Mail postmen have a specific type of colour, but we live in an era where there's, you know, there's loads of different delivery companies. So if someone goes postman, delivery driver, courier, it could be any. It could be Herpes, it could be, you know, Amazon, it's, you know, and now you've kind of got the Deliveroo drivers delivering stuff. It's like there's so many delivery companies, and there's, you know, it's hard to pin down who has a uniform anymore. So I think that makes it very difficult for people. So, you know, even though his uniform may not have said Royal Mail on it, you know, he would have looked like a delivery driver, so that's good enough. And he's holding a parcel, so I don't want to tell you too much about, no, there's bits that I'm not going to tell you for this, because I want to save it for next week's episode, because the connections between the postman and the devil's child are kind of interesting. What was stolen? I kind of glossed over it a bit. Homaira said, obviously, she was conscious for most of this. She did kind of black out during part of it. As you can appreciate, she'd been stabbed in the back and the side, and she was losing a lot of blood. So she did amazingly well just to be able to regain consciousness there. She told the court, I did not know I was stabbed. There was no pain, but I could not feel anything in my legs. I sat down and I could see my husband defending himself with another man. That's Elliot, the postman. Mrs. Monkton said that one of the men demanded her jewellery in a shockingly calm voice. He took rings worth 1,000 euros apiece, a pair of costume jewellery earrings, and a £2,500 watch. So that's the most expensive item they got, was the watch. But even that, when you think about it, 2,500 quid for a watch, it's like, you know, they've got a 5.5 million pound house. So obviously these guys were expecting her watch to be 20, 30, 50 grand, something like that. But it's, you know, clearly she likes fashion, but she's obviously quite a frugal lady. You know, she spends it on things that she likes as opposed to just flashy shit. Homaira managed to make her way upstairs to the first flight of stairs before feeling a dampness, a heat and a paralysis causing her to sit down. She told John that she was bleeding. Elliot, by this point, had pulled down his balaclava over his eyes, so all they could see was his kind of eye holes in his mouth. And the same with the devil's child, Damien. He was he had his balaclava over his face as well. What was taken? So it's a pair of earrings, two diamond and emerald rings, a watch and a purse, which they said was roughly £4,000. I think that was it. She told the court, now I focused on my husband. He was struggling and I was thinking that I was dying, but he would survive. He looked so strong. He was fighting, still holding the man's wrists. I screamed to my husband that I'd been stabbed, but I don't think I said it many times. I think I fainted. I sat down and I could see my husband defending himself. I could see my husband holding his arms up high, holding another man's hands in front of him, above his head, away from him. I did not say anything. I was stabbed. I sat down. I could not move my legs. God, that must be a horrible feeling. Like, you know, her husband is being attacked and she can't move and she's passing out at the same time. During the attack, Isabel, who was one floor above, so obviously you got the ground floor, the first floor and the second floor. Isabel was on the second floor. She heard her mother screaming and came to the landing and looked downstairs. She saw a man on the stairs wearing what she described as black clothing. We'll go into this further next week. I'm going to be careful what I say here. She remained upstairs, although she could hear her mother screaming. She later gave a pre-recorded interview to CID, where they got like a child specialist to sit down in front of her and get her to go through all the details of what she saw that night. Elliot punched John quite a few times in the face and then held him in a bear hug as Mr. Monckton fought for his life. This was all in kind of the doorway of between the front door and the lounge. In total, John was stabbed multiple times. So he got wounds to both hands. So they're defensive wounds. A 2 meter stab wound to the right, to the shoulder blade. A 5 centimeter stab wound to the upper right part of the to the pelvis. A stab wound through the upper right arm. An 11 centimeter deep wound, which incised his rib and entered his right lung, and a 12 centimeter deep wound to the heart that went right through his heart. So pretty much, you know, chance of surviving that is well, not great. I'm gonna be caring. I think I'm not gonna give you too much here because I've still got to write next week's episode, and you know, I don't want to give stuff away here that will be in next week's episode. That's always the problem with multi-parters on Extra Mile. As mentioned, you know, Isabel heard her mother's screams. As mentioned, her mum's still on the first floor landing. She can't move her legs. She's passing out. But you know, she called to her daughter and said, "Help, Izzy." Who ran downstairs, put the chain on the door, and called the police. It looks like she set off the panic alarm. I can't actually find the details of it here, but the witnesses did say that they heard the alarm going off. And there's, you know, given the fact that John's collapsed on the floor downstairs, the door is locked, the robbers have gone, and the mum's paralysed, there's only one person who could have switched it off. So I've put in the episode that she set off the panic alarm because she's the only person who could have. She ran downstairs and she said she saw blood all over the floor and the walls. Her mother had been stabbed twice in the back and was lying at the bottom of the stairs. So she calls for an ambulance. At this point, John is dying. Homaira has passed out and is bleeding, and her daughter obviously is traumatized. It's hard for the police to get information out of them. Police initially couldn't get into the Monckton's house because Isabel, quite rightly, had locked the door. So she had to hand the key through the letterbox so the officer could actually unchain it, and then he actually unfastened the door because it had been chained as well. When they arrived, Mrs. Monckton was conscious but badly bleeding, very pale. Her breathing was shallow and irregular, and her condition was deteriorating fast. She was given CPR by both the police and the staff. Lying in the doorway to the lounge was John Monckton. He was on his back. He had blood all over his chest. He was not moving, and after checking for signs of life, the first officer on the scene could not feel a pulse. Ambulance staff who attended to John found that his breathing had become suspended, and he was in cardiac arrest. They did CPR in the house and drove him to Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, which is the nearest, but he died shortly afterwards. That is all I'm going to give you on that one, because next week's episode There's a lot to cover in that. And to be honest, I think there's going to be a lot in Extra Mile as well, because I researched a lot for this. And there's a lot of details that I think I might gloss over just for the sake of clarity. But we'll find out next week. I haven't written it yet, so no point talking about stuff that I haven't written about. Right, answers to the questions. Here we go. Get yourselves ready. Question number one. What is the average age of a burglar? They are 27. They say 27. They say that the many seem to start around the age of 23, but there's quite a few who are kind of 17 and under. So there's a real kind of discrepancy. So obviously, as mentioned before, a lot of them seem to do it because of peer pressure and boredom. And then there's that kind of gap where it seems to be like young men get into their early 20s, they don't really have a job, they start getting into drugs and drinking, and that's when they become burglars. So yeah, but so average age is 27, which is interesting. I thought it would have been a lot younger. What is John's middle name? It is Victor. Name the three types of burglar. There's a chancer, a creeper, and a confronter. And we'll dive more into those next week. As long as I remember to do that. Question four. Name the Monctons' two daughters. I think I mentioned two of them in that bit. Then it was Isabel and Sabrina. Question five. John Moncton's great uncle Sir Walter was legal advisor to who? That was King Edward VIII. I shall be abdicating for the woman I love. That one. Who married Wallace Simpson. Question six. Homaira was born in which country? Let's see, Iran. Question seven. What's the average house price on Upper Cheyne Row? It's between £3 and £6 million. Which is interesting. As mentioned at the start, they're not very flashy houses. They look kind of Edwardian, Victorian kind of terraced-y houses. And they're quite plain on the outside. But clearly, you know, if you were to go inside, be expensive. You know, lots of bedrooms, probably two kitchens, probably a cinema room. You know, some of them probably got pools, you know. So, yeah. Question eight. What's the name of the shoe shop Homaira visited? It's called Via Venice, or Via Venice, you can call it, but it's Via Venice. Question nine. What two colours were Elliot / the postman's fluorescent jacket? There's orange and blue. And question 10, a really hard question. John's father's name was John, but what was his mother's name? It was Emily. There we go. That's that. That's all good and done. Whoa, hope you enjoyed that. Whoa, that was a burpee then. Sorry about that. That was disgusting. I'm going to start editing this. Oh, this will be another 3-day slog. Hopefully it won't be as difficult as last week's episode, The Falling Man. That was bloody difficult. If you subscribe via Patreon and you're in the Handsome Hamlet or above category, you will get Walk With Me, the episodes that I record after I've edited each episode of Murder Mile, and I give you kind of an insight into how it was edited and all the little secrets that are hidden in there and things that have snuck away that I won't know about while doing Extra Mile because I haven't edited yet. You've just heard it, the edited version, but I haven't edited it yet. This is recorded after I've recorded it before I've edited it, whereas Walk With Me is recorded after I've edited. Falling Man was really difficult to edit. It was a real nightmare. Hope people enjoyed it. It was a very different one to what I'd normally do, and that was the whole point. But yeah, very complicated. Hopefully this will be a nice simple one. Fingers crossed, Michael. Let's try not to make it too difficult. Good, that's the end of this episode. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back next week for more fun and part two of The Trader and the Devil's Child. Have yourself a good week. Be good. Lots of love. Stay safe. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.